Hey, everybody, and welcome to Allegedly with me, Matthew Cole Weiss.
And I'm Theo Vaughn.
Hi, Theo.
Hey, bro.
I'm just going to announce my big news. Yeah? I'll do it here.
Yeah?
I sold a script.
Unbelievable, dude.
I know. I sold a script. So
I'm proud of you, man.
Thanks, man. I wrote it like years ago, and then nothing ever happened to it. And then all of a sudden, boom, someone picked it up, and now I'm rewriting it, and I'm just very happy about it.
Dang,
dude. And it's interesting, because today we have a guest coming in who is a writer, director, actor himself.
Mm-hmm.
I still don't know how to pronounce his name.
I'm going to say Jay Chandrasekhar.
Your lips kind of like pursed so that there was no like accents, or not accents, but like no strong word. It was all
my grandfather
kind of
was a philanthropist. One of the
A ventriloquist?
Ventriloquist, my bad.
Philanthropist.
What's a philanthropist?
Someone who gives a lot of money to donates money.
He was not that, dude. He wouldn't even give a shit, dude. He smoked cigarettes and one of his cheeks kind of turned yellow, though, from smoking a Marlboro Reds.
In the inside or on the outside?
On the outside, bro. Ooh. I'm not looking at the inside of my grandfather's cheeks.
I don't know. That freaks me out.
Well, he's gone now. He's in heaven.
Yeah. Jay, you went Chandrasekhar.
No, I didn't, dude.
Yeah, you did. Your lips moved
Chandrasekhar. That's what I said, and it's not offensive.
So you just don't accentuate any kind of syllable.
Well, here's the funny thing. Go on. Get out there, huh? You fucking,
I don't know.
Fearless, dude. You're like a fucking dude on a diving board. You're afraid to fucking jump in.
Chandrasekhar.
Okay.
Chandrasekhar.
Okay.
Chandrasekhar.
Like Chandrasekhar.
See, you do it like...
Well, here's what I think is interesting about some names. It's like, some names, it's not... If I don't impersonate an Indian accent sometimes, how can you even really get the name correct, you know, 100% correctly, you know?
You're talking about if it's an Indian name.
Yeah, like if it's an Indian name, you know, like if it's, say David Hasselhoff, like I'm sure it's better if it's like David Hasselhoff, you know?
Nope, doesn't sound better to me.
Oh,
what about Aziz Ansari?
Aziz Ansari.
See,
yes.
I mean, I think it sounds fine as it is.
No, I think to them
Aziz
we
Ansari.
Sound like. Yeah, there you go.
And why does everybody sound like a poo?
Be like, so what? Probably like a bell just rang on a door.
Okay.
But here's what I'm saying is it sounds more. To me, it sounds like if we don't say it with an Indian accent, an Indian name, that we sound like rednecks to them.
To them.
Like we sound like hillbillies, you know? When we're like,
you or me?
Jay Chandrasekhar.
You know? Or me, or anybody.
Anybody.
Okay.
But if we're like, Jay Chandrasekhar.
See, I think that's pandering to them.
I don't think it's pandering at all. I think
it's being
very earnest.
We'll have to find out. We'll have to find out. Yeah. Well, this guy, you may know him from Super Troopers, but he's a huge comedian, does stand-up, was in Broken Lizards, mm-hmm. did Club Dread, Beer Fest. He directs like every TV show that is now out there, and he's got Super Troopers 2 coming out,
yeah,
which
amazing.
A lot of people are stoked about.
Oh, people are ecstatic. I know Ari's excited. And he's devilishly charming, this guy, I would say.
Yeah?
I think he is, man. We're really happy to have him in. We'll be right back with Jay.
Chandrasekhar.
Oh, my God, bro. You're racist. Yeah. We'll be right back. Dude, man, I feel like it's my birthday right now.
Why?
Because I got my loot crate. Bro.
Oh, I got my loot crate, too.
You did?
Yeah. This is the first time I've ever gotten it.
Yeah, me too.
It's pretty freaking cool.
Yeah.
I mean, I wasn't too familiar with it before they started this. Mm-hmm. I opened it up. It was like a Christmas present.
Mm-hmm.
It had all these cool, like, toys and memorabilia, and they're all kind of revolved around different themes and franchises, movie franchises. You know I'm a big movie buff.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Big time. So let me tell you what my favorite thing in this one I got.
Okay.
I have a Predator mm-hmm. bottle opener.
Oh, really?
You know when I like to drink, I want to be a Predator about it.
Oh, you turn into a Predator, so, dude. Definitely, bro. Especially if you're around a young men's
Stop
college.
It.
Yeah,
no,
but it's
no.
true, though. Well, because last month's theme, I think, was investigate, right? Mm-hmm. Like each month they have a theme. And Loot Crate is like a box of basically like rare collectibles and goodies that comes into the mail.
And it's a surprise. You don't know what you're going to receive when you open it each month.
Right. So if you have like a family member or a friend who loves like nostalgia or different, like I got a Wolverine character thing, Like I got they had this Jurassic Park. Like,
oh yeah, I got that one too. It's
you
like
did?
A Jurassic Park sign that says like this is electrocute or something. I put it up in my bathroom.
Yeah, so like if you have a friend, family member that likes Guardians of the Galaxy, Star Wars, Destiny, Goonies, any of those kind of franchises,
yep.
then they're going to love this experience.
This theme, I think the theme for May is Guardians.
Ooh.
And one lucky subscriber, because you subscribe to this, mm-hmm. will also win a Mega Crate featuring a premium format Groot figure from Groot. Sideshow Collectibles that stands over 22.5 inches tall, as well as many other prizes.
Wow, that's taller than my baby cousin, actually. So that would be beautiful to have. Yeah, Loot Crate is the best surprise you know is coming. If you go to lootcrate.com/allegedly and enter the code Theo, you'll get 10% off a new subscription.
Hmm. Yep. So you subscribe, and it's, from what I recall, it's over a $45 value in each crate for less than $20 a month for the subscription. And you can take this stuff to work. I have my little figurines that I put on my work desk.
Ooh.
So it's fun.
Oh, I wonder if they have bridges in Madison County. I'd love some figurines from that, dude. Don't tell anybody, bro. I'm chill,
mini,
bro.
Mini bridges?
Whatever, bro. I'm chill, all
well,
right?
Well, they're all authentic, licensed, exclusive products. Everybody go to lootcrate.com/allegedly. Enter the code Theo to save 10% off any new subscription.
That's right. So check it out. Lootcrate, lootcrate.com/allegedly. Enter the code Theo to save 10% off. Go grab your subscription. Support Allegedly. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Allegedly, and today we have a legend in his own right.
And in a lot of people's rights, I
yeah.
think.
I love
Young
this guy.
Legend.
Yeah, no, Theo. Theo's here with us today.
No. Ari Manis
yeah,
is here
with us. I thought
you
were talking about
Oh, him. Yes, Ari. No, okay. We have Super Troopers creator, star, and also did many other movies, including
Super
Beer
Troopers
Fest,
2.
Super Troopers 2, which is, I assume, what you were talking about doing with Rob Lowe.
Yeah. Had we started already?
Yes, no. We've started.
Now we've just started.
Oh, yeah. We just started. That whole.
Should we start over? I don't like it.
Okay.
The early part we were talking about, it's not part
the
of
the Coke part?
It no, could be.
I don't think we were recording.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. No, we were talking about cocaine and women without legs, right?
Yeah.
Because that's what you do before.
I met a woman when I was high on cocaine that didn't have bottom appendages, legs. No. One woman I made love to, and I signed her cast after. I didn't think
what
about
is,
this. Different appendage story, but she had a broken... limb, and it was in the same thing you used to do, like a turn signal on a bike, whatever that is. That kind of, I don't think it's like maybe like this. Pretty interesting.
Okay, and by the way, this is the voice of. All right, help me with the full name I'm trying to do here.
Yeah, I'm gonna watch you,
Jayanth.
It turns me on when he says Middle Eastern names, Asian names. Sorry, and I'm racist. Go on,
Jan Bellingham. Jim Billingham?
Dude, come on, man. Get your Indian up a little. Curry your neck, son.
Jim.
This is offensive, and it's not even my name.
Forget it.
I'm racist, so.
He's actually getting close. It's the hesitancy that's so awkward.
Yes.
Now even the one I know, Chandreskar.
You kind of got them all wrong.
Okay. So give me the correct.
Jayanth,
two syllables.
Like giant with a lisp.
Jayanth.
Jumbalingum.
Like jumbalaya with
like
gum.
Bubble gum. Okay. Jumbalingum.
Jumbalingum.
Chandrasekhar.
Chandrasekhar.
Yeah. And we're sorry to take you back to the name thing, but it is kind of tough. A lot of our listeners are, you know, not prolific.
That's a difficult name.
Yeah, no,
but it goes by Jay.
Right. I mean, it's 31 letters. It's a tough name.
Yeah, okay, good. As long as
it's a tough name.
I mean, you're like the last round of a spelling bee, just kind of wandering around the streets.
Yeah, guaranteed to get that one wrong.
But I did read that it means
large
penis.
Well, the middle name means
large penis.
The whole name means Victorious Large Penis Rising Moon.
Yeah, fuck yeah, dude.
Of course.
I think my mother has that jacket. She lives out in Tucson. She's into all that, bro. She's way into your culture.
Okay. I unfortunately never found that out until I was about 25. I made a short film that had the editing credit, Jumbalingam, and my friend's mom was watching the film, and she started laughing, and my friend's like, what? And she said, do you know what that means? And she said, no. He goes, that means large penis. And he's like, no. So he calls me up. He says, you know your middle name means large penis? And I was like, no. So I call my mother up and I'm like, does my middle name mean large penis? And she goes, well, literally, yes. And I said, she goes, but figuratively, it's about power. And I'm like, well, you know what? I'm like a teenage kid hitting on girls in suburbs of Chicago. Yeah. It would have been helpful.
Let me get the tattoo.
How many
on
people
that
would be curious about? I mean, come on, what a wasted decade for me.
Wow.
I knew a guy named Big Dick Mike that lived by us growing up. But
you didn't
that
mean
was
a nickname?
Yeah, it was a nickname.
But I bet it's his parents didn't name him Big Dick Mike.
But I know that he had a lot of confidence around him because people referred to him as that. So
that's
I can
right
imagine how it would have affected
that's
you
right
if you had known. Is
that's
what I'm
right
saying, trying
that's
to relate
right
to him.
People might not know, aside from your acting, you are a prolific director as well. And you do a lot of TV
yeah
and films and stuff. But
yeah, I think people know, though, don't they?
A lot of people know you as the dude from Super Troopers. You know, they
so
would
you're
say,
right. Some people do say, when are they going to make that sequel? They'll say that to me. And I'm like, it'll be out in 6 months. They're like, oh, are you in it? And I'm like, yeah. And they're like, all right, cool. All right, good. And they're, you know, I mean, they literally don't know anything.
Yeah.
See? But so I wasn't too far right off. Okay, there we go. Well, this is Super Troopers 2, which people are stoked for.
Yeah, excited.
Very stoked for.
Did you feel like that movie was going to have such a success? I mean, did you feel that that was coming? I mean, obviously, you're hopeful for it.
The first film?
Super Troopers, yeah.
No, because we made a film called Puddle Cruiser, which we took to Sundance first, and we had enormously, like, amazing screenings, and yet the movie didn't sell there. And so we were like well aware of what it was like to take a movie to Sundance and fail. And so when we made Super Troopers, you know, one of the things that happened was the Puddle Cruiser, the first film, it's a good movie, right? It gets laughs, it's all that stuff. But the opening 10 minutes kind of suck. And so we were having these screenings and the opening 10 minutes would be slow. And we were like, God, this is a problem. So we started doing sketches in front of the screenings where we would like
smart
bring out mirror puppets and ventriloquists, just trying to get the laughs rolling, and then we'd show Puddle Cruiser. So when we made Super Troopers, we were like, let's make a good opening so that we don't have to bring the puppets out when we screen it. And we made this, we wrote it, and then we shot it, and then finally, the day before we went to Sundance, I watched it with Kevin Heffernan, who played Farva in the color timer in the lab. And I watched that first, 8 minutes, whatever it is, title comes up, and I'm like, stop the film. And the projectionist stops the film, and I'm like, we fucking blew it again. We totally missed again.
Hmm.
And Kevin's like, what are you talking about? It's good. I'm like, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about, man.
Just like you say in the movie. Too.
I'm like, this movie, this is, what did we do here? Why am I acting like Clint Eastwood? So is Rabbit. We're both doing the same bit. It was like, it was really this whole, like, I was like, this is not good. And we're going to have to, and I said, I'm going back down to the apartment to get the puppet. Because we're going to need it in Utah.
Puppet out.
And I did. I got the puppet. And I flew with the puppet to Utah. His name was Billy the Dummy. And Kevin, when we got to Utah, was like, we're not doing the damn puppet thing. And I'm like, fine. So I left the puppet in the room, and we went to the screening. And, you know, that crowd was so, it was an 11:30 Friday night crowd, and they were so high and so kind of buzzed from dinner. They were just lubed up, and you're like, maybe we'll see what happens. And the first, I mean, they were nearly ripping the seats out. I mean, when the title came up on screen, half of them stood up and cheered, but the wow whole place cheered. And you're like, oh my God. And I mean, tears rolled down. I cry like
imagine
once a decade, right?
But I can't imagine that feeling, man.
Tears
wow
of stress.
Really,
I mean, it's like you on Grindr, just tears, right?
Yeah. There's a lot of lubing going on in
yeah
there, too.
When you get a match, yeah. You ever made love based on your own tears as a lubricant?
No.
Oh, yeah. Very.
Not above it, though.
A lot
so
of
we were, I mean, I'll honestly, we didn't know. I mean, the one scene I thought was funny for sure was the powdered sugar scene when, you know, the chief of police is interviewing
yeah
Farva naked. I knew in my gut that was funny. Yeah.
But the rest you question. Because you don't. Not
a lot of it's self-loathing.
Yeah, you're yeah a tough critic.
Yeah, you see yourself on screen, you're like, oh, shit, do I really look like that?
Yeah.
Do I sound like that? And you know, all that stuff.
Is that really me?
Yeah. Entirely.
Why can't I be different?
Yeah.
But then you do it again. Yeah. So you're doing the sequel.
Keep doing it.
Yeah.
I mean, what is it? How many years later?
I think it's about 12, 13 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Why now?
Well, you know, ultimately, the first film was sort of a little bit tied up in some legal kind of stuff. And it took a while for it to break loose. In the intervening years, we didn't want to just make more Super Troopers, because, you know, I mean, if you look at the Police Academy guys, they literally just made those Police Academy movies, and that's fine, that's good. But we tried to avoid that sort of trap. But I mean, I don't know. I mean, it just seemed like it was time to do it.
Hmm.
You know, I'll say this. You know, there's a lot of pressure on making a sequel to a film that had that reaction in people, right? So I was like, you know, we got to make sure that the audience doesn't see the movie. And, you know, like the last thing, like what I said to everybody was, I'm only going to make the movie if we're exactly the same weight as we were when we made the original.
Mm.
So that, you know, they may look at us and say, oh, they're older, but they're not fatter and older, right? I mean,
right.
I wouldn't want them to have that shock. We're like, oh, geez, okay, I'm fat now. So,
yeah, like, man, Eric Estrada's really
exactly.
Lives next to a donut shop.
So I said, that you have to be same weight, and the mustache need to be double the size. So so we did those two things.
So obviously, are you done with it now? Is it?
Well, we're just recording. These guys in the band, the Eagles of Death Metal, are doing the score.
Yeah, of course.
And when they're done, we'll mix the sound and we'll be done.
So how do you feel right now as someone who...
Well, you know...
I'm very curious.
Look, but I'll tell you this. The worst you're going to say is, it's good. Huh. That's the worst.
That's good?
That's pretty good.
That's the worst.
It's rare these days, I feel like.
And for someone, I mean, you seem like a critic of your own work, so it seems like you do have a confidence of it.
I'm a critic / promoter.
You're a Kotover.
All right, what are you expecting, man? Are you stoked about this?
Well, are you going to bring puppets to the future screenings?
There will be no puppets.
Oh, and I'm excited. Wow. And that I'm says excited it all. To see it.
Well, and this movie has something the first doesn't, which is Rob Lowe.
Rob Lowe is in this movie, a guy who I met on the Grindr, and I don't mean the gay website. I mean
the
television show from Fox, the Grindr.
How is Rob Lowe? I've read, I mean, there was a big TMZ story not too long ago out about him with his assistant requirements. Did you hear that one?
No. I don't usually read TMZ for real information.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
It's fake news.
I mean, it's absolutely, right? Yeah. I mean, they make it up, right? They make it up. I know they claim to be a legitimate source, but they're not. But the he is... I describe him as a comic trapped in a leading man's body.
Wow.
He is like, he does, like certain people, he does the best Bill Paxton imitation in show business.
Hmm.
It's amazing. It's like, you're like, oh, that sounds exactly like him.
Hmm.
He can do voices. He's very aware of how to, like, sort of draw you in. He's a very charming
Does he know how
cat.
Beautiful he is?
Huh.
When you're around, you know, someone that beautiful?
You don't see that very often, extremely funny man get trapped in a beautiful man's face and body.
I know, it's weird.
Yeah. Would you sleep with Rob Lowe?
I would probably sleep with Rob Lowe if he already knew he was laying in bed, and I kind of got in a bed kind of behind him.
Okay.
And it was dimly lit. Ari?
I would sleep with him just for the career gain alone. You think I want to be producing this podcast?
That's true.
You think that's what I want with my life?
Bro, you're also opening up for Pauly Shore.
Oh, yeah. You really got it made. Yeah.
Jay, would you sleep with Rob Lowe?
I mean, I've had my opportunities, I would like to think. I mean, I'm a director of a Hollywood picture that he's the star of.
Fair enough.
I mean, it feels like that could have happened. It didn't.
Didn't happen? Oh.
Do you feel a lot of, like, is it weird as you gain power in Hollywood, like becoming a director and having, because people can't help but realize that, I feel like, in this industry, you know, like, that's what they're here for. Whether, you know, people are good people, whether they are or not, but when it comes to work, it's work.
That's a great question.
Is that weird? Is that weird for you, knowing that you're more powerful now?
I wasn't sure if this question was saying in terms of being able to sleep with people. Was that what you meant?
I don't know what I mean exactly.
Is it weird for me to think that I'm more powerful now than I was?
Yeah.
Matt, what do you think it
means? What do you think my question was, Matt?
Yeah, totally. Because, I don't know. I think, like, I know some stuff, but I don't know everything. You know?
Yeah, I think he's asking, like, now...
That clarification did not clarify.
I don't think he's asking...
You know some stuff, but not everything.
Right. I don't think he's asking casting couch-wise. I think he's asking more in the sense of, like, you have power in this industry now, and I'm sure people treat you differently because of that? Or do people treat you differently because of that?
Yeah, is that weird to manage? What does that feel like?
And do you have to question people that you're around?
There are X amount of show business dollars out there, and I am competing for those same dollars with Nicole Kidman, Khloe Kardashian, I mean, you know, Rob Lowe. I mean, everybody... we're all going after the same thing, you know, and the various channels and movie companies are going to award it to whoever they think is, frankly, the hottest at that moment. So the people who succeed most in sort of achieving, you know, their long goal in life are the ones who really, like, make a movie for the studio. Like, so let's say Tom Cruise, he makes Mission Impossible.
Right.
It's a fairly predictable outcome financially. And the studio's like, thank you for all that money. And now he goes, you know what I want to make next? This. And then they'll go, okay, he'll make that too. And for him, he's able to make those things work as well financially. But I mean, if you watch the best, you know, Clooney makes Ocean's 11 and then he makes whatever, The Informant or whatever. I don't know what that was, probably a Matt Damon movie, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like, the people who do that are the ones who survive long term, because you have to make the corporation money. You have to, or else they'll stop funding you.
Damn.
That's the deal.
And where do you feel, I mean, where do you feel you fit in that?
I feel I've mostly chosen to make films that I wanted to make, and as a result have probably made four or five less films than I could have made.
Interesting.
But I mean, there are films that they asked me to make that I'm glad I didn't make. But
yeah.
And those movies went on to make a lot of money, and I'm like, had I made that, I could have made this, but I didn't.
Right.
You know, what's at the end of the day, you're probably judged by the list of movies you made.
Yeah.
You know, and if you have a couple of lousy ones in there, you know, people are going to be like, "Man, it was not cool."
Yeah.
It was pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, interesting.
We have a connection, actually. You directed Dukes of Hazzard.
I did.
It became between me and someone else to direct the direct-to-video sequel. I almost did it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, almost did it.
Did you work down in Baton Rouge? Is that where you guys shot that? What was that like, man? My family lives down there. You can make fun of it.
We ran Baton Rouge. Yeah. It was me and Knoxville and Sean William Scott and Willie Nelson, Burt Reynolds, Jessica.
Damn.
Kevin Heffernan was down there, and we just ran it. I mean, they were like,
y'all could have bought it.
Opened the town.
Y'all could have bought it, bro.
I mean, we shot a 6-day chase scene in New Orleans, and the chief of police and I were standing on the 10 highway, which they'd shut down in both directions for us. And at the end, he gives me his card. He goes, son, you get into any trouble down here at all, you give me a call.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, thanks. He goes, anything short of murder. And then he goes, actually, murder's okay for you too.
That's awesome.
That's a beat.
Here's a question that Eric told me to ask, which is it true that you committed credit card fraud for your first film?
Well, I mean, technically, yes.
I want to know about this.
Sold.
Now, this could be a bit that we could get to go viral.
No, I mean, what happened was we started making Puddle Cruiser, and we raised a certain amount of money, but we knew we were going to be about $30,000 short. And we were, and I couldn't raise any more money. Around the same time, I got a credit card offer from a credit card company for something like $10,000 made out to Dr. J. Chandrasekhar. And I'm okay. So I said, sure. And then I got two more, and I charged it up for $30,000. And I got a call literally right after we finished the film, and they said, you're not a doctor, are you? And I'm like, no, not yet. I mean, I'm not right now. That's
I'd be like, you're not a good mailer, are you?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like, it's a little bit racist that you think all Indians are doctors and you send me this doctor. I mean, really, that's on you.
Dude, now if you were to tweet that, you'd be off the hook for the $30,000, I bet.
Yeah, that's hysterical. Wow. Okay, but did you eventually have to pay it back?
I paid it all back.
Yeah, that a boy.
With interest.
That's a good doctor.
It's a good doctor. Yeah. Bro, you're more qualified than half the doctors I've been to.
Well, also, on top of Super Troopers 2, which comes out...
Sometime in the next 6 months. I don't have a date yet.
You don't have a date.
Is that going to be in theaters?
Yeah.
Nice.
You authored a book.
I did.
Mustache Shenanigans.
Yeah, that's the name of it.
Like, is a mustache, why the mustache? Is it like a spirit animal for like an Indian guy, kind of?
Well, I think that's a good question. There are a lot of Indian guys have mustaches.
Yeah.
So that's a very good point. But the mustache for me, you know, when Burt Reynolds was sort of the king of Hollywood, he had one of those mustaches that like all the dads in the neighborhood both Indian, white. Like everybody had a Burt Reynolds mustache. My dad had a mustache.
Yeah. White thighs and Burt and that mustache.
Oh my God, they love it. Love him. But Indian, my uncle also, he had a huge Burt Reynolds mustache. And he loved Burt Reynolds. I mean, and I always loved Burt Reynolds. That's awesome,
dude. Well, that must have been cool for them when you had Burt Reynolds in your movie.
Yeah, it was cool. Wow. It was cool. I mean, Burt and I fought a whole lot. But I still love him. And I love that mustache. And really, the mustache in Super Troopers was homage to his mustache, his and Billy Dee Williams.
So for the book, like, is it people that would love, I mean, what's different about it than your...
In addition to telling the story of how I tried to get Super Troopers made and was told no 75 times, including one yes, the guy said, look, I'll give you the money, but Ben Affleck has to play Thorny. And I'm like, I said, yeah. I mean, I'm playing that part. And he goes, not in this movie, kid. And I'm like, oh, fuck. And so we walked out. So, I mean, we kept getting told no, 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 no. And finally some guy who, you know, didn't know better gave us $1 million.
Wow.
And he's made 10 times that now. I mean, but, you know, there's the story, all the like very like inside specific detail of trying to make that film. Making it, selling it at Sundance, doing ecstasy at Sundance, meeting Patrick Swayze, you know, staying up all night and then getting the call from the lawyer to come watch him negotiate the deal. You know, like getting Harvey Weinstein to come into the screening and, you know, like there's all sorts of like, and then the release, which was fun. And then, you know, and then everything after. And then I talk about Beer Fest and Club Dread and Dukes of Hazzard and, you know, first time I got high with Willie Nelson. I talk about this like incredible like fight I got into Burt Reynolds where he gets injected with a high potency painkiller in the middle of it and starts drifting into space. And then, you know, I talk about the beginnings of my life, how I got into stand up, starting an improv in Chicago and, you know, doing lines with Chris Farley, who was sort of in a upper group. I was in a lower group and hanging out with him quite a bit. And, you know, it just sort of, it's a dead honest story of how I made it in show business and then a lot of specific, hopefully funny stories.
Do you have to get permission?
That's fascinating.
I'm just curious, like, would you run it by people, like Burt Reynolds' people? Or do they know?
I thought that was better not to.
Yeah, probably. I
mean, you know what? The fact that there were four other people in the room. They were there. They saw it. You know, like you don't. If you were the only person in the room with them, I suppose you would have to run by them. But
is it weird getting into an argument or getting into some sort of issue like that with an idol, kind of, or somebody you really?
Yeah,
it must have been bizarre.
It's bizarre. Bizarre. It's bizarre, and ultimately, it's fun because it's fucking Burt Reynolds.
Yeah,
yeah,
and he's like, "I saw your movie, Super Duper Pooper Scooper," and you're like, "You know, you're like," and part of you is like, "You're out of your mind right now because I just saw you take that shot," and the other part of you is like, "This is like a real life moment here. This is
you're like, that's a great thing.
This is so fun.
That's the sequel.
So fun."
Hey guys, I just discovered something legit. It's the best new way to buy business travel, okay? It's called Upside.com.
And I'm telling you, as someone who also has discovered Upside.com.
Oh, you have, Matt.
Even if you're not a business traveler, you know someone who is, right? You have to tell them about Upside.
Yeah, and here's why you have to tell them. This is a serious thing. Like, every time you buy a trip at Upside.com, you save a ton of money and they give you an Amazon gift card worth $100, $200, even $300 every time.
What?
Yeah. Think about an Amazon gift card. You ever had one?
Uh-huh.
Now you can have one again, dude. The way they do it is it's really clever. Upside bundles your flights and hotel together for one low price. Bundled pricing saves money, especially on business travel. So Upside gives you free Amazon gift cards.
Ooh, so I can get my travel and go buy stuff on Amazon like... I don't know. What do I buy on Amazon?
Books, hats, anything. If you're a frequent business traveler, your company saves a ton of money, and you can get thousands a year just for buying your air and hotel together.
But do you still get miles, though?
At Upside, yeah. You still get all your miles. So you're not losing your fancy miles. You can still use those for flights or rewards.
Huh.
But, I mean, you'd be crazy not to check out Upside.com. And if it's not for you, then it's for anybody you know who travels for business. Just go tell them about it. What do you have to lose? Tell them about it.
It only takes 3 minutes just to go and save money on your hotel and your flights. I can't believe it's taken so long for someone to do this, actually.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think if I had like a travel agent or something, it would be easier, but I don't feel like doing all of that, you know?
I barely have a regular agent.
Yeah, dude. Well, check out what I've arranged for you, bro.
For me?
Yep. Ooh. Use BizTrip, BizTrip, and you're guaranteed to get at least a $100 Amazon gift card for your first trip.
Oh, wow.
BizTrip gets you at least $100 Amazon gift card free.
Well, this sounds like a no-brainer.
Of course, man. How can you not do it?
I mean, you're saving big on travel, and you're getting a big gift card every trip.
Every trip you get one, bro. Every trip. I love Upside.com. Upside.com. Minimum purchase required. See site for details. Did you always feel like you had some sort of a destiny, or do you sometimes feel like you were taking just chances that you thought were just shots in the dark, really?
Well, I think, you know, like when I started, there were zero Indians in show business on the movie screens. I mean, Ben Kingsley was the one. He'd won.
Like an Agatha Christie novel.
He won for Gandhi. But they weren't going to make it Gandhi too, right? I mean, that one ended. That the grim ending. That one. So. Look, when they wanted an Indian for show business in a big part, they just put a white guy in brownface. I mean,
yeah.
Peter Sellers, they put him in brownface.
Or
Fisher
Stevens in Short Circuit.
Or that guy from 70s show. What was that guy's name?
Wilmer Valderrama?
Yeah. Right. But he was undetermined what that was. Right?
Yeah.
What is that guy, dude?
He was TBA.
He was Mexican. South American.
I thought he was Hispanic.
Did we get the test back on that guy? Somebody needs to.
But Fisher Stevens. Yeah, Fisher Stevens was in Short
Johnny
Circuit 2.
Number five.
A movie my dad said, he goes, have you seen Short Circuit 2? I said, no, he goes, you got to see that movie. I'm like, why? He goes, there's an Indian in it.
Wow.
I'm like, Dad, that's not an Indian. He goes, I know, but that's as close as we'll get.
Wow.
You know what Fisher Stevens' real name is?
Uh-uh.
Stephen Fisher.
Fuck.
Mind blown.
Yeah. I wonder who else has switched their name up. Weaver Sigourney would be dope.
Weaver Sigourney.
Just call me Weave. You're pretty dope, dude. Oh, man.
Speaking of, do you think that's
so crazy to take on an ethnicity, yeah, just to be out there like a brave ethnicity?
Do you think it's changed?
Well, hell yeah. I mean, I'm the Jackie Robinson of Indian comics. If that's what you're trying to say, then yes, I am. I mean, look. I mean,
that's
Aziz
good,
is there.
That's
Cal.
True.
Cal Penn is there, and Mindy's there,
very true.
Kumail's from Pakistan, but he's there.
You know? Ravi Patel, he's a young Indian guy. Who else do I know that's Indian?
Who else do we know?
There are a bunch of Indian comics now.
Now, how does it get weird to the point where you're like, damn, now there's a lot of Indians.
Too many Indians. Yeah. too many goddamn Indians.
Yeah.
It's okay. You know, I got to say, you know, when I do stand up, right? And there are a couple of Aziz is a bigger stand up.
Yeah.
You know, Kumail Nanjiani, he's a bigger stand up.
Oh, yeah,
he's very good. Granted, he's from Pakistan, but still, I mean.
But yeah. Still, it's similar.
Better than Stephen Fisher.
Right. Russell Peters.
Amazing guy.
You know, he's a bigger stand up than me. So now I'm like the fourth biggest Indian stand up in show business. And I'm like, I was the only one.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there was a point where I was the biggest stand-up in Indian show business when nobody knew who the hell I was. I was still the biggest. And now I'm sitting here at four. But I'm coming for it.
I haven't read the book. I apologize. But I read that you are very open about kind of drugs and things like that, too.
Yeah.
In this. Was that hard to reveal that sort of stuff?
I decided to write the stories as they really happened, right? And then I said, I'm just going to go back later and I'll just clean them up so that, you know, when other people read them, they won't think I'm like a deviant. Right. And then when I did that, go back to clean them up, I was like, there's no story here.
Did you have to warn people about these stories that were coming out as far as in your family or anything about some of this?
Well, you know, I was playing golf with my dad and I opened my trunk to throw my clubs in and my dad goes, hey, there's your book. Because I got a copy of it. And I'm like, yeah. Okay. He goes, hand it over. I'm like, okay. I give it to him. I'm like, I just want you to know that I never, you know, I never got addicted to anything. And he goes, good. What's in this book? And I'm like, you know, he always said to me, he goes, everything in moderation.
Yeah.
And I used to say to him, everything? And he'd go, everything. And I'm like, okay, well, you'll see where that led
okay,
us.
You gotta look.
Wow.
That's fair. That's cool, man. That's so
never,
neat, though.
Never addicted to anything.
No.
Are you sober now? Or do
no,
you do?
God, no.
God, no.
No.
Do you think yeah. that...
I mean, it's okay if you guys are sober, but I'm just not.
No, I'm not.
Good for you.
My question is, and I've always wondered this about myself, is... How do you feel that these sort of things affect the creative process for you?
Oh, that's a good question.
I think that pot smoking is like the great opener of minds for comedy generation. Hmm. Like creating raw comedy ideas, if you smoke some grass, in my opinion, it's gonna you know reap some real benefits if you write them down. I think once you get to a structural writing standpoint of actually putting a script together into act 1, 2, 3, whatever, you can't, I don't think you can do it high and do right. it well. I think you'll run out of steam. I think if you think that smoking pot will get you my job, you're half right, you know, because
well, I'll take half your job.
You know, you can come up with the raw ideas, but if you can't get them into script form and then go out and hustle and make it happen, none of which, you can't go to meetings high, you can't show right. up at work high, you can't do yeah. it. I mean, you shouldn't.
Right.
You know, if you're an actor, maybe you could. I know some people who do that, right. but not Burt Reynolds.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know what I mean? It's like, it's a valuable part of generating jokes.
Hmm.
And what about other drugs? Like as far as cocaine, I find that to be kind of problematic if you're getting into cocaine, you know, for the writing.
I don't think that's a valuable tool for writing personally. I mean, I've never heard of anybody succeeding writing on cocaine.
Oh, there's got to be, right? Like musicians, maybe.
Probably are.
Maybe.
I just haven't heard of it.
Yeah.
In the comedy business, I haven't heard of it.
Yeah. Really? There's got
to
be.
I've tried to do some comedy on cocaine before, and it is hard and uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And I couldn't feel the audience's react. Like, I was afraid to wait for the audience's reaction.
Yeah.
Because, like, didn't know what it was going
right.
to be. So I wasn't, right. just wasn't on my feet, you know? It was really uncomfortable.
It's not good for
yeah.
It's no, it's not. It doesn't help. Yeah. So if you're on cocaine, man, get some help, I think, you know. I mean, you know, have fun, but also get some help.
I felt hollow, so. But okay.
It did? But I really mean it.
Though. Oh, okay.
What if your actors are on drugs?
I don't mind, as long as they know their lines. You know, like it's the whole machine works best when people come in and have done their job. I mean, all actors have to do is show up on time and know their lines. And if they do that, it's almost impossible to fail. I mean, you know, it's because they're a human and they're reading the lines, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, what did you want? What did you expect, right? I mean, that's what we were hoping for. And so
fair enough.
If you're high, I mean, you know, people don't typically come in and say, oh, I'm high as a fruit bat, right?
But you know. Yeah. You will know.
I don't necessarily
high.
Know. No? I will know sometimes. I've worked with actors who other people will tell me, oh, you know, they're always high. And I'll think back about, you know, I'll usually shoot 4 or 5 takes of the script, make sure we get it right. And I'm like, you have a particular talent. Why don't you riff for a while? Do 3 or 4 takes on your own. And they'll riff and you're like, and you think back and you're like, yeah, okay, I get it.
Yeah, of course. Huh.
Some of the jokes were preposterous and unusable, but funny as shit.
Right.
Maybe, you know, maybe they were high.
Good. I want to know is, we were talking earlier about the freedom of speech a little bit. You kind of touched on it. Like, do you feel like that's becoming inhibited where, like, people are afraid to say what they want to say? Like, I feel like... I definitely feel as a comedian, there's some things on stage that I can't experiment with out of fear, you know?
Well, you know, it's an interesting thing because what you're really, I think you're probably getting at is race.
Yeah.
Is that what you're talking
about?
Yeah,
sometimes, yeah. Race and gender. These days, gender's right. become more a hot topic, whereas...
I like dancing on that edge of that line. I think that with race, it's an interesting thing for me because in some ways, Indians are like somewhere between blacks and whites, right? I mean,
yeah.
the real fight in this country seems to be between black and white people.
Yeah.
And, you know, like the rest of us are kind of watching and kind of like, ah, you guys are not getting along.
Good luck with all that.
And you know.
That's hilarious.
So, but it doesn't change the fact that I've had racial run-ins. And because of that, I'm allowed to speak about it, right?
Right.
So I don't let You know, I will also say this. Like, I have talked to Indians who were racist against other races. Like, they're racist against Pakistanis or racist against black people, right? And so I think the way the conversation about race in this country is so, it's predictable. It's like, oh, all white people are racist and all minorities are innocent angels, right?
Right.
But, you know, if you talk to my grandmother, you know, I had been dating a series of different women, and she was like, when are you going to date an Indian girl? And I was like,
wow.
I was like, when I meet one. And she goes, oh, I don't believe it. She goes, well, it's all right if you marry a white girl, just don't marry a black girl. And I was like, and my grandmother was, you know, two shades darker than me, right? And
right.
The point is that racism is so, it's just not an accurate picture. And you could tell from this election that white people were getting sick and tired of being told that they're racist. They're sick and tired of it because it's not true. So I like to dive into that. And in terms of gender, I think we're wired so specifically to be sexually what we're into, right?
I mean,
into women or into men, into butts or boobs or whatever, you know, white or black or whatever it is. I think that there is if you attack it from an intelligent way, you can succeed there. And if you don't, then you can fail brutally.
Yeah.
I was going to say that.
When it fails, it can fail brutally.
Right. But, you know, if you're smart about it and honest about it, then you can stand up there and go, you know, I'm proud of that joke.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Didn't work, but so what?
Do you direct stuff that you don't think is funny?
Never.
Personally? Really? Never?
I did one show that I thought wasn't funny because I was like, okay. My agent just wouldn't leave me alone. He's like, come on, just do it. Just make the money. Just take the money. I'm like, all right, I'll do it. And I started shooting it, and I'm like, you know, at the end of a take, I like to say, okay, that's good. Let's move on. And I'm like, I had a hard time. I couldn't say it.
Hmm.
I was like, okay, let's move on. That was I couldn't say that's good.
It's okay.
And I'm like, I'm done with that. I'm not doing that again. Huh. If I don't, you know, and now to be clear, every single television show I do is not the same tone as our Broken Lizard movies.
Yeah.
They're network funny or they're whatever funny, right? But
you
have
find
to go,
the funny in it.
You have to go, I understand why this is funny. I understand why the audience is going to think it's funny. And while I may not, you know, be the core audience for this, I get it. That's a funny gag, and we know how to shoot this well.
Are you planning on sequels on any of the others, like Club Dread or Beer Fest?
Well, Club Dread, at the end of the movie, most of us are dead.
True.
We've talked about doing a prequel, but then we'd just be hanging out at a resort island, and there would be no like killer. So that
right,
one,
that's
you
true.
Know, you know, and Bill's dead now,
yes.
So you know that kind of dead. So I don't know. Maybe Beer Fest.
Maybe. You know what I actually found interesting when I was doing research is your cousin is Senthil
Ramamoorthy
from Heroes.
He was the
really.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's cool. Wow.
It was one of those things when I was like, I bet you they say in Hollywood like, oh, all Indian people know each other. And then I looked it up and I was like, oh wait, his cousin really was the Indian
guy.
Well,
he was a production assistant on my first film, Puddle Cruiser, and he slept on my couch before we went up to do that because he said he wanted to be an actor and he had hair down to his waist at the time. And I'm like, first of all, you have hair down to your waist. Second of all, there's only room for one Indian in show business.
Aziz Ansari.
Well, and I told him, I was like, don't do this. I said, you just get into something else. I said, don't become an actor. And then he finished the movie and that was that. And then he's actually in the movie. He's like dancing around in a party scene. And like 4 years later, I'm turning on NBC and I'm like, holy shit, there's my cousin.
Wow.
And yeah.
He did it. Wow.
That's awesome.
He's just one handsome motherfucker.
He's a handsome guy.
I mean, we had dinner in Toronto and, you know, like the waitress is like totally ignoring me and leaves, you know, hot waitress leaves him her number.
Oh.
And he just crumples it up and I'm like, what the
hell? The waitress leaves the number? Oh my God.
Adam.
I can't tell you how many times I've left the number for the waiter.
Yeah.
And he's never called.
Have you ever done that?
Leave my number for the waiter?
Dude, see, you guys got to be.
No, nobody's ever called. Oh. One time I did it with a friend. With another guy, and he got the call. Like, I was insinuating that it was this guy who left the number, and he got the call. The guy called.
I'm curious about, like, what are Indian women like? I don't really know that many Indian women.
Are you married?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Indian women, what are they like? Boy, this can only get me in trouble.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, I didn't mean to. I'm just generally curious.
No, I mean, you know, they're I mean, I'm not even sure what the
I went to an Indian wedding one time.
Brown skin and dark hair and
yeah.
You know, they dance well a lot. They're often pretty well educated.
Colorful too. Colorful, a lot of colorful garments,
know?
I see.
You know.
I went to an Indian wedding one time,
yeah.
And they rode in on a horse and a elephant.
Wow.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's cool.
It was really cool. But anyway, no, I just wanted to
bring that up. I like them. I like Indian women.
Yeah.
Did you marry an Indian woman?
No.
No. Did you marry a black woman?
No, but I dated three.
There you go, playboy.
There you go.
Take that, grandma.
Take that, grandma. That's right. I married an Irish-American woman.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Huh. Irish, huh?
Yeah.
She's not an actress.
No.
No.
The Scottish
would
cocaine.
You ever date an actress?
I have.
Yeah, how'd that go?
I dated a girl in Hollywood who was like, I mean, she's actually a well-known actress right now, and she just had an alcohol, like a hard alcohol issue, so.
Oh, was it that lady Moran? What was her name?
No.
Erin Moran.
No. She'd go to we'd go to parties together, and she'd say, "Don't let me drink."
Ooh.
I know
hard
who it
alcohol,
is.
And I'd say, "Okay." And inevitably, she would have found her way to it, and she'd be in physical like fights with other women, very attractive women usually. And I'd have to get in there and be like, "All right, let's break it up. Come on, we're getting out of here." Well, that's a long way of saying that some actresses are less mentally stable than others. Now there are plenty of very stable actresses, I'm sure, but it's a challenging business to be judged nonstop and to feel like your age is about to limit you and all that stuff. So
yeah,
I've dated actresses, but it was never it was sort of always what you kind of what they say about it, which is it's a mental challenge.
But no, I'm gonna pick up the book and read it more tales of show business and mustache shenanigans.
And if you're not a reader, you can get it on audible.com. I read every word of it.
Oh wow.
And now when you're doing that, are there moments where you're like, oh, that chapter came in a little weak there?
No, you know what happens is that you realize that as much as you can write it on paper and it's gonna be that, when you speak it, you're just like, well, this is exactly the inflection that I meant it to be in. And so you kind of like revise. You go, oh, let me do that again. Let me do that. Let me read that sentence again. And then you hit some sentences that you're like, I can't believe I wrote that down. And I can't believe I have to say this. And I found myself doing 20 takes of this like really risque moment in this book. And you're like, and the people are recording it out there, and like it's this, you know, woman director, and I'm like, Jesus, I was fucking talking about like eating pussy at age 13, and I'm like, oh, God,
wow, it's beautiful if visual could, with that mustache, too. Yeah,
those are some mustache shenanigans.
I was 13. I had no mustache. I was 13.
Maybe she did. If you could have anybody read your audiobook, aside from yourself, who would you have do it?
I mean, you know, certainly the great, great ones are like Christopher Walken or...
Morgan Freeman.
Morgan Freeman would be great. I have a Morgan Freeman impression.
Oh, you
this
do?
This is from the movie Seven, when he's on like the site of a crime scene, and Brad Pitt walks up, and someone's rolling a corpse by, and he says, "So many corpses roll away unavenged."
Okay. Get ready, because Theo has a Morgan Freeman impression that is kind of similar.
Yeah. All right, here we go. They said it would take a man 600 years to get out of this here prison, but Andy Dufresne did it in less than 20. Pretty fucking good, dude. That's thank good, you, bro. That's cool. Thank you, man.
I knew he was just dying for that to come out.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Yours sounded a little kind of Winona Judd, I feel like, in the back.
I'm not a big impression man. I should have prefaced it with that.
That's fucking great, though.
I don't do impressions. Mine would be, hey, I'm Morgan Freeman.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming. Now, this is, we're going to go to the, you want to go to the finale, Matt?
Yeah.
Is that okay with you?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know what that means.
that means you're going to have to pick a winner of this podcast.
Yeah.
Who did a better job, Theo or I?
We each get 30 seconds to convince you why we are the winner. And I'm going to pitch as an idea, since Mustache Shenanigans is the name of the book, maybe we can do something based on that. Like we can tell maybe a 30-second adventure that happens to a mustache, or a mustache is involved in a story.
Okay.
You agree with something like that?
Sure.
You want to go first?
No.
Fuck, dude.
Dude.
Let's go. All right. There was a little girl, and she was probably maybe 3 feet tall, and she was only 4 years old, and she fell down a well, a wishing well. But it wasn't like somebody made a wish on her and threw her down. She just fell down there on natural causes. And when she came back out, she had a mustache. That's my story.
That's
called Mustache.
Pretty solid.
Oh, thank you very much. Yep. 30-second story about a mustache. And you got about 4 seconds to figure out what yours is.
Well, my movie about mustache will definitely be a musical for sure.
Okay, I love this
with
mustache,
like John Waters
musical.
Like type mustache.
Oh, that is not even a mustache.
Oh yeah, it is.
Let's just come and lick this off my mouth, buddy.
Mustache Shenanigans, the musical. I fucking love that.
Okay.
And it would be like that type of, but all sorts of mustaches. Maybe I don't know. They're roommates in like Santa Barbara or something.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and they go to like
the
Palm
mustaches
Springs?
Are roommates.
Yeah, the mustaches are roommates. Yeah, yeah.
Pretty good.
Yeah, and then it's like a trip. Maybe they're all gay. Okay, well, they're all gay, and they all go to like Fire Island for the weekend. Mm. This is great.
And the mustaches need human hosts to walk them around. Is that
wow.
sort of the idea? Maybe.
Yes, I like this. I like this. Sold.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean,
sold.
I mean, I like it. I like it. I was like really into it, and then you know you said Fire Island for the weekend. I'm like, okay. I mean. That's a choice for
it's limited.
I just made it indie.
Very limited.
Yeah, I made it indie.
I do like the idea of different mustaches that people. That's how they get adventures out into the world. Is that people put them on?
Yeah,
yeah.
Mustache shenanigans.
Yeah,
I like
interesting.
It.
I'll give you the win.
Oh yeah, thank you.
Fair.
I thought it was good.
I
thank you very
it. No.
Much.
Well, Matt's a yeah. fellow director.
So
and
everybody,
I like it.
Go check out Mustache Shenanigans. You can get it.
I'm gonna buy it and I'm gonna read it.
Yeah.
Okay. Good.
We're not even going to take free ones. We're going to buy it.
Well,
okay.
We weren't offered free ones, but we wouldn't take them anyway. I decided a little while ago when you explained the book to me that I was like, this sounds really, really.
When's the last time you read a book?
I'm going to buy it. The last time I read a book.
Do audiobooks count?
Yeah, audiobooks count.
Yeah, this year.
Okay. Good.
Yeah, I think I read a book this year.
So that wasn't a hollow promise.
Mm-mm, no.
Okay.
No, I'll get it and read. I'm actually pretty excited.
You know what I'm excited about too is because. You said in the beginning was that you were turned down 75 times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yet it still got made somehow. And that gives me hope.
Hollywood, the people who make it in Hollywood are those who, how they respond to the word no. I mean, you know, a lot of people, when they hear the word no, they get crawl up in a ball and they're like, fuck show business. Fuck it. Fuck it. But the ones who make it are the ones who like, you know, that's just like fuel on like a raging angry fire.
Did you have to teach yourself that or was that by
instinct? I don't know. I think ultimately I sort of describe in the book that it's called rejection rage. You know, it's like, oh, you're going to tell me I can't make this movie? Watch me, motherfucker.
Damn.
I mean, that's how the people who really get there, that they're all like that. They're like, fuck you. I'm not going to make this fucking movie. Fuck you. And then they figure out a way.
I need some of that.
And with that said, I will be I'll be at the Stand Up Live in Phoenix next weekend.
Same thing.
On Saturday and Sunday night.
All right.
So you guys
thank you so much for coming in, Jay.
Yeah, Jay, thank you so much, man.
And being honest and giving me hope, actually.
Yeah, definitely. I feel inspired. Really neat stories. And just thank you for sharing your time.
Thanks for having me.
All right. See you next time.